Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. We have a fantastic episode for you today. We are joined by European Commissioner Valdis Dombrovskis, former Prime Minister of Latvia, multi-term commissioner, and among your many achievements, you have a degree in economics for engineers, which I love because economics is for everybody. I have many other degrees in other subjects, but I was just going through your bio and I thought that was great. We're going to be talking about a great number of things today, joined by Bruegel's director, Jeremy Zettelmeyer, and also our researcher, Anne Boucher. We are going to start out by talking about the situation in Ukraine. The Russian invasion was now 4 years ago. The EU has been providing a lot of support for Ukraine. Valdis, what is your sense? What have we accomplished and what do we have to do now?
Good afternoon. Well, as regards Ukraine, it's important that we take the course that we continue to provide all necessary support to Ukraine and that we continue to put further pressure on aggressor Russia. So as regards support, what is positive news since the change of government in Hungary is a Ukraine support loan of 90 billion euros is now unblocked. So we are able to move forward. So we are finalizing all the necessary documents for this with a view of disbursing in the first half of June. And also as regards sanctions against Russia, we have now adopted and agreed the 20th sanctions package. But it's important in a sense to sustain this pressure. And in a current juncture, what becomes more and more important is actually fight against sanctions evasion and avoidance. Because as we have putting further and further sanctions on Russia, Russia is also working actively to find a ways to circumvent those sanctions. Therefore, there is lots of focus right now on sanctions enforcement.
How does the conflict in Iran and the change in global oil prices affect that effort to keep the sanctions up?
We stay the course, and we had been very clear that we are not changing our decisions to phase out completely Russian fossil fuel supplies. And obviously, it is important right now not to ease sanctions pressure, because already now Russia is actually gaining from the war in Iran as global oil and gas prices are up, and correspondingly, that provides windfall revenues for Russia. And this has been also our message internationally, including in G7 and other fora, that let's continue with application and tightening of sanctions.
Thank you. Jeremy, Bruegel has some exciting news about Ukraine. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so Ukraine became a special member, a state member of Bruegel last month. And so what this means is basically they enjoy all the rights and they have all the obligations of membership, except they do not pay and they also do not vote. But in all other respects, they are like any state member of Bruegel, and that's great. And I mean, on the general situations, I just wanted to basically say that it's great how much leadership the Commission has shown on this, the President, but also Commissioner Dombrovskis. And overall, we are in a much better situation, I think, than many of us feared we would be about a year ago, after it was clear that U.S. support would effectively stop. I think we have turned the corner. It's terrible that this war is going on still, but I think it's going in the right direction.
And based on your longtime observation of how things work around here, can you help listeners put in context the real changes that the EU has had to make to continue supporting Ukraine, given the opposition of the previous Hungarian government and kind of what we've learned about Europe? What's your sense of how this affects the way Europe makes decisions, either on security or other topics?
I think the Hungarian blockage was really a big problem. I mean, I think it's quite good that we have managed to overcome it. I think what is really a key issue to look at in the situation is Ukraine, is also how the Commission will handle the enlargement issue, because this enlargement issue will be much more controversial among the member states. I don't know if that's your impression, Commissioner Dombrovskis, that this will be very tricky to handle, and what can the Commission propose to facilitate the integration of Ukraine in the EU?
As regards enlargement, I think the strategic decisions are taken. We had been clear that the future of Ukraine is in the European Union, and we are now making progress on practical steps towards this, including formal opening of the accession negotiations and advancing with this. In parallel, while the accession process is ongoing, we know that it takes time. We are looking how we can integrate Ukraine already in a number of sectoral policies so that Ukraine can already start benefiting from its integration de facto in the European economy. Obviously, we'll have to look also as European Union, how the EU will be functioning with enlargement, because enlargement now is firmly back on agenda. So we have to think how EU will function not at 27, but at 30 plus. And obviously, one question which comes in mind in this case is a principle of unanimity. We see how it's difficult already with 27. It only takes one country to create the issues as it affects the entire EU. So this is something in parallel to the accession negotiations we need to also discuss internally within the EU.
A big part of your portfolio now is trying to simplify the EU process. Can you tell us where things stand? You just had a big communication out about the recommitment to simplification. What does it mean?
Indeed. So we recently published our communication on better regulation, outlining a number of things. So far, our simplification agenda has been focusing on existing stock of legislation, and we had been putting forward last year 10 major simplification proposals, so-called omnibus proposals, and we have set ambitious targets to reduce administrative burden by the end of this mandate by 25% for all companies and by 35% for SMEs. And with a 10 omnibus and some other simplification proposals, we estimate the reduction of administrative burden of some 15 billion euros per year. So one can say we had been for a strong start, but our 25% target corresponds to 37.5 billion euros, so it's still a long way to go. So our better regulation communication is more forward-looking, so that not only we deal with the existing stock and simplify it, but also when we are designing the new rules, we implement this simplicity by design principle, so aiming at leaner, clearer, and easier to implement the rules, also with realistic implementation deadlines. We are strengthening our better regulation system, so how we are doing the impact assessments, also setting a more thorough pathway for urgent initiatives to ensure their timely delivery, but also underpinned by robust analysis. We are also optimizing how we use different consultation tools regarding these inputs. Then we also announced with this communication a regulatory deep cleaning action plan, where we are looking at 12 policy areas as a priority to assess the rules in those areas to eliminate inconsistencies, overlaps, unnecessary complexity. So in a sense, prioritizing certain things for this year and next. And finally, also addressing the question of gold plating, because one thing is a regulation we are setting at the EU level, but often what we see is that member states are then coming on top of this with even more stringent requirements and doing this inconsistently across 27 member states ends up with fragmentation, with barriers to the single market. So we want also to streamline this by choice of legislative instruments, so focusing more on regulations which are directly applicable, so there's no scope for interpretation by member states, or some harmonization directives instead of minimum harmonization, but also working with member states to address gold plating where we are seeing it, and also stepping up enforcement against member states if we see that gold plating are contrary to the EU law.
So should we expect to see a bunch of infringements coming against member states that are going beyond?
In general, another element in our better regulation communication is also a faster and more robust enforcement. So not only in a specific case of gold plating, but in general, focusing notably in the area of functioning of the single market, addressing barriers to the single markets, which had been created by member states. But so we're setting up revamped enforcement approach. So based on faster procedures, more automaticity, also higher dissuasive penalties, the focusing on addressing also longstanding cases across different areas of EU law.
Thanks. One more getting started question, which is you mentioned reducing the burdens on small businesses. How much of that is just deregulating and not making those regulations apply to them versus finding ways to streamline them and make them less burdensome?
Well, it's both. We are also looking at the scope of our different rules and regulations. And what we obviously see is that regulations which may be fit for large companies are not fit for SMEs. So there is also lots of descoping, which is taking place. Also, in terms of reporting standards, we make sure that SMEs can adhere to their simplified reporting standards and also tackling so-called trickle-down effect when, say, is there are value chain and banks or larger companies and value chains are anyway imposing their reporting requirements on SMEs because they need it for their own reporting. So we are, in a sense, going against such a practice and also explaining to the larger companies and banks how they can use data they received in a simplified reporting by SMEs or by certain proxy analysis for their own reporting purposes.
Interesting. You know, it's been a big issue for the sustainable finance disclosure situation. And you and your co-author, Elisabeth Goldberg, have written a really interesting paper about simplification and how the EU can work better. How does your sense of the issue match with what the Commission's actually doing?
I think, first of all, we're very happy that the communication came because it's a recommitment to better regulation. And I think the whole episode of the omnibus in particular has really upset some parts of the institution and of the stakeholder community because it gave the impression that a lot of these things would happen without impact assessment. So it's very good news from that point of view because it's a recommitment to better regulation. There's still, for those who read the communication with external eyes, a lot of questions on how this will change and how you will implement things. I think efforts to reduce gold plating or things like, or to improve the assessment of proportionality and subsidiarity have been on the agenda of the Commission for more than 25 years. So really how you're going to deliver on this is still a bit of a question mark when you read the communication, and maybe you can give us some indications on this. I mean, there are many, many questions I'd like to raise. It's a wonderful opportunity to be able to talk to you. I would maybe focus on one point which I found very, very tricky reading the communication is that you are now saying that there will be more impact assessment happening because basically there will be major initiatives which will have an impact assessment and there will be targeted initiatives which will have some form of a light exercise, which is not an impact assessment when you look at what you're describing in the communication. I'm just wondering, what is a major initiative? Is it a new legislation? What is a targeted one? When you review a legislation, is it targeted? A delegated act is targeted? I mean, I really wonder how you expect to have more impact assessment now. And also, I mean, it gives the impression that what will happen to targeted initiatives will have less analytical backing and also less oversight, because at the end, the RSB will be the regulatory scrutiny board will only give recommendations, but not binding opinions. So I was a bit trying to understand exactly what was behind. I mean, one way also, I mean, will the omnibus be targeted initiatives or will be major initiatives?
Yes. Thank you for those questions and comments. Of course, the question is now the communication is out, but how we are going to live up to all the principles and initiatives under this communication? And there, to put simple, the proof of the pudding will be in eating. So we have to live up to this, and this requires also regulatory self-discipline, and often it will require also that top-down approach, ensuring that those better regulation principles are followed. Well, you mentioned it's not the first time we are coming with similar initiatives, which is true. Also, generally speaking, it's not a first time the Commission is announcing some work streams on simplification in general, but already what we have done so far is unprecedented, both in terms of scope and ambition, in terms of really simplification and reduction of administrative burden. So I think we already have certain track record to show that this time we are serious and we really want to deliver on what we are outlining here on simplification, but also on other areas. Then on this question on impact assessments. On impact assessments, one element which we are underlining is that a broader range of legislative initiatives will be accompanied by impact assessments. In a sense, will be more throughout dealing with requests to diverge from normal, so to say, preparatory procedures, including doing the impact assessments and public consultations, that this kind of requests will have to be duly justified. So what exactly is urgency, why it was not possible to do on time, and it will also will in a sense create a paper trail documenting those requests and justifications from granting those exemptions. So we want to make exemptions really exemptions, not almost a rule. And then you asked about what is a targeted initiative. Well, I cannot give you now a specific definition on targeted initiative. As the name suggests, it's not a broad based legislative proposal with serious effects, with effects which are probably not initially obvious, whereas targeted is something indeed much more limited, which maybe does not require a full-fledged impact assessment. But there's no, you know, precise definition to give, you know, this is targeted, this is not. This again will require some discipline to make sure that targeted is really targeted. On omnibuses, it may depend. Generally speaking, we have omnibuses which do quite substantial amendments, and by definition, omnibuses are legislative proposals which are amending several pieces of legislation. So it's therefore not obvious that omnibuses in general would be targeted initiatives. But again, that doesn't include that there may be some more specific ones.
German, is the Commission doing what we need in this area?
So I'm ambivalent on this communication. So I like the fact that it embraces better regulation principles and restates them. And as Anne suggested at the beginning, we needed that because, of course, the omnibus bills, even though they were arguably necessary politically and as a signal to business, notably lacked a better regulation flavor because they did not attempt to quantify the foregone benefits of simplification of or deregulation. And you know, let's be frank, in many cases, they went beyond simplification. They actually reduced regulation, which may have been entirely appropriate, but it did lack the impact analysis that went with it. And so, you know, for those of us that we're wondering, is that because the Commission no longer believes in better regulation? We were now reassured. Absolutely not. The principles will be re-embraced. So in that sense, that's great. Now, however, you know, what is missing a bit in the communication is a sense for why better regulation did not work as intended in the past. And it clearly did not, because if it had worked as intended, we wouldn't need a whole bunch of omnibus bills to sort of undo excessive regulation. And so, you know, if you expected that sort of analysis, and I think, you know, for example, in Anne's and Elizabeth's policy brief, there is such an analysis, you're bound to come away a little bit disappointed. So it's a bit like two marriage partners renewing a vow, but, you know, the marriage didn't go that well. And so you're then wondering, you know, how credible is this, right? Now, what I would like to ask the commissioner is I can see two interpretations. One interpretation is to say, well, this, we haven't told you yet how we are going to make sure that next time will be different, but it's coming. I'm not sure there's a lot in the communication that would lead me to think along those lines. So, but it's one possible interpretation. Another interpretation is to say, actually, the better regulation framework is fine. We don't need to change much. We just need to have the greater political will at the Commission level to interpret it. And by writing this communication, we are stating that political will. And so we are simply going to make this framework work now. And so that's the other possible interpretation. And so I would like maybe the Commission to comment on whether that's the right one. But if I can just put in one word before, even if that's the right one, there's still a little bit of an issue. And I think Anne was hinting at that when she was talking about gold plating, that even if the commission can in effect bind itself with this communication, it can probably not bind the co-legislators. And so I am a bit concerned about the parts that have to do with implementation, enforcement on the side of member state, and also the actions of the co-legislators. So if I can give you one example, the commission correctly points out that one big problem with better regulation in the past is that significant amendments that were made by parliament or council were not normally impact assessed, even if the original legislative proposal was impact assessed, and this needs to change. That is true, but as far as I recall, there was already a commitment to do just that in the 2016 interinstitutional agreement, and it was not honored. So what
Well,
should
yes.
make
so
me believe
quite a few questions. So maybe on this better regulation framework in general. Well, EU already before this communication had and has one of the best better regulation frameworks in the world, as acknowledged by the OECD. So we can make it work better, and I think our communication gives sufficient detail on how we are going to do this. Well, to actually do it, yes, you are right, you need to see this happening, and that will require certain discipline from the commission side, and we are determined to have that discipline. But you also very rightly noted this point that what is important for stakeholders is not what the commission proposes, but what comes out of the legislative process, because that is then what applies to citizens and businesses. And indeed, we have a 2016 agreement on better lawmaking, interinstitutional agreement, where also the co-legislators committed to do impact assessments of substantial amendments, but it's not working in practice. The European Parliament have done it very few times and not any time recently. Council has not done it at all. So we are putting this issue back on agenda also in this better regulation communication. We already have prepared certain simplified methodologies how to do the impact assessments for substantial amendments without unduly delaying legislative process, because we can see that concern of the co-legislators, but obviously that's an important element where various stakeholders often also raise this issue with us and with co-legislators, that's indeed an issue how the legislative process is organized. Well, but there we can only appeal on the co-legislators to apply the principles of better regulation to impact assess substantial amendments, because as a commission we cannot really impose it on co-legislators, and I think with us from the commission being consistent on this, coming also with those methodological support and so, and with strong demand from stakeholders, we can persuade the co-legislators to also apply these principles.
So what about this issue of the co-legislators? I often wonder, do we have a trade-off between simplification and democracy? Because all of these MEPs, members of the European Parliament, want to add amendments. They want to show they're doing things. National parliaments want to show they're engaged. That adds complexity.
Well, I think there is nothing wrong with both member states and European Parliament, members of the European Parliament being actively engaged in legislative process. That's their work. But what we care at this case is the outcome of legislative work. So in a sense, we do not need activity for the sake of activity, but we need legislation which at the end of the day is lean, clean, easy to implement for stakeholders and serves a purpose.
And what are your top recommendations?
I mean, if you go back to our policy brief and how we looked back at the practice of better regulation, one of the things which seems to be fairly consensual is the issue of the quality of impact assessment and even more of evaluations. Yeah. I mean, you read things If you take the history of better regulation, you can say in the first 15 years, we have tried to, from 2000 to 2015, to develop this, to get the culture of impact assessment through the different services with a sequence of questions you have to ask when you prepare a policy, the template of impact assessment. Since 2015, there has been a really lot of efforts on trying to improve assessment of impacts, in particular on quantification. So trying to assess cost and benefits. And it has been a lot of efforts. And still now I read the reports of the commission and I see that, I mean, there's more than 40% of the impact assessment, which have only a partial quantification of cost and benefits and much less of benefits than cost. And it's not very useful. So we have to ask ourselves, I mean, and in fact, it's one of my questions. You sit in the commission in charge of better regulation. What is your dream? Impact assessment. Because for us, I think we need to change gear in terms of analytical capacity for impact assessments. We carry out impact assessments. We know there's going to be a political policy initiative. We launch a tender to get an expert out, an external expert to provide some analytical material. The exercise is over. We never update that material. We're not even owner really of that material, of the material, of all the tools. And so when it comes to evaluation or review, we're not able to capitalize on the efforts of the impact assessment. So the idea that we have to have an internal analytical capacity in the commission and to organize ourselves to provide on a continuous basis and with the help of IT tools, of artificial intelligence, to be able to really have assessment of I mean, consensual baselines, to have tools which allow us to monitor cost and benefits, to update them depending on the context and things, should be in place and help at the time of evaluation. When I say that, I mean, it sounds completely unrealistic and very demanding for the Commission resources. But in fact, as we quote in our policy brief, the Commission, it's not something that the Commission has never done. In practice, it has done it. It has done it for climate change. If you think of all the work which has been done with a different modeling exercise to define the optimal greenhouse gas emission reduction path and to assess that in a granular way to know what should come from energy efficiency, reform of the decarbonization of the power sector and things like that. It has done it for agricultural policy. If you think of all the analytical tools we have to assess the CAP and the implications for farmers, for the income of farmers, for international competitiveness of the agricultural sector and environmental protection. We all have this in place. So it's not that we're not able to do it. We have the JRC. We have a lot of other examples of how to create center of expertise. And it's also very important in that work that it is used for consistency of the assessment, but also to create a consensus with the member state and the parliament. I mean, if you think on agriculture, we base our projections to the work of the OECD and the World Bank. In climate change, we have had reference scenarios which were drawn up together with the member states. So a lot of the issues had been cleared by this analytical work. So, I mean, for me, it should be one of the key priority of the commission is to say, let's try to do as well as we did in areas like climate change to push a policy which was fairly controversial for the member states. Yeah.
So should the Joint Research Center become about impact assessments? And what is your dream assessment?
First of all, it is part of our communication, as I was saying, also to have more pertinent impact assessments. Whether we choose a dream that everything is perfectly quantified and all possible aspects are assessed, I think it remains something we can aim to, but then there are also practical limitations. But as we just heard, there's also maybe a bit uneven sectorally. There are sectors where it's better developed, also in quantitative terms, maybe there are sectors where it's less. So horizontally, some areas where we'll try to reinforce the impact assessments are questions like competitiveness check, SME test, exactly trying to quantify, trying to better assess. So what our business legislation, how impact on our competitiveness, on administrative burden, and so in a sense, what we want to achieve, how much it costs to have better this analysis on SMEs applying this think small first principle. really having this focus, not only on legislation, but also how a small company, a really small company, can actually deal with this legislation. So how this SME test. So there are areas where we will certainly focus this effort to have more pertinent impact assessments.
Thank you. We heard the word competitiveness come up, and certainly this has been all that Brussels can talk about for the last couple of years. We had the Draghi report, the Letta report. Jeremy, what can the Commission do about competitiveness, and are they doing it?
The Commission can do a lot, but very often it cannot do it by itself, right? I would say broadly, the Commission has three responsibilities, and they roughly correspond to the way I would characterize the three big areas of the Draghi report. The first area is related to single market and the power of coordination in Europe. And this, of course, is an area that the Commission has pushed forever. And member states do not like to give up sovereignty, and some of this is about delegating sovereignty, and so it has a hard time. And so, understandably, this is an area that has not been making a lot of progress. And, you know, from what I see so far, the signs that it will make a lot of progress in this commission are mixed. So I'm hopeful in some areas like capital markets union, the capital markets side of savings and investment union. I'm less hopeful in areas like energy, even though the commission has very good ideas, very clear ideas that are largely aligned with the Draghi report. So this is a tough area because the commission is not in charge. Then we have, I think, a competitiveness dimension where the commission is largely in charge, which is exactly Valdis's simplification and regulatory reform agenda. And here I would say the proof is in the eating. And so I really hope that this time will be different. I wish that the communication had been a bit stronger in the sense that it had started with a diagnosis for why things didn't go as planned, and that would then have increased the credibility of the Commission when it says, we know exactly what went wrong, this is what we're going to do differently. But I very much give the Commissioner the benefit of the doubt that it will take this very seriously, and we will see how far we get. Again, it's not an area the Commission can entirely decide on its own, but at least it writes the regulatory legislative proposals, and it can shape them a lot. Also, the power of the initial impact assessment is a very big one. And by the way, it can also, and this is something that's not actually in the Commission, it could, to the extent that it really builds a center of excellence on impact assessments, it could actually offer the co-legislators, look, once we have established a common standard on what is a significant amendment, we are very happy to do the impact assessment for you, which is not something that the communication says, right? The communication says, everyone, if you mess it up, you have to do your own impact assessment. So maybe this is something where you could be more ambitious. But this is sort of the one area where I really look to the commissioner, to Valdis, to deliver change. And then there's another area where I also look to him to not so much deliver change, but to prevent harmful change, because there's, of course, a whole big area that is, in a sense, foreshadowed a bit in the Draghi report, where we, as a economic union, are swerving a bit, are trying to imitate a bit the economic nationalists around us. So this started with the Biden administration. Of course, Trump is much worse. We have the Chinese effectively going into protectionism and interventionism, industrial policy. And so there is a sense in Europe that we have to do some of that as well. And I actually share that. I think that we probably will need some degree of protection from a flood of Chinese imports, but it cannot be the main show. It cannot be the main show. The main show has to be structural transformation and getting new areas to grow rather than just protecting areas in decline. And so here there are very many bad ideas within the member states, within even the commission. And of course, Valdis is the man with the good ideas. And so I'm really hoping that he's going to be firm and not letting the bad ideas through.
Would you like to tell us about the change you hope to deliver?
Yes. Well, maybe first on this broader competitiveness agenda, because indeed, when this European Commission took mandate, we set two overarching priorities for this mandate. One is competitiveness of European economy. Another is security and defense. And now more or less 1.5 years in a mandate. If anything, these priorities are more urgent than they were. So on competitiveness, that's why one of the first initiatives of the Commission was so-called competitiveness compass, where we are basically translating the Draghi report in a policy document. And it has many different areas. So we basically outline areas or elements which are important for European competitiveness and what to do about it. And this is a very broad range of topics. One is just we need to invest more in research and innovation, where other major economies are just spending more to compare with the size of their economies. Then it's we need to address our relatively high energy prices, which were relatively high already before war in Iran. Skills agenda, making sure that our workforce has the right skills in a context of rapidly changing technologies and workspace and so on. That's where also our simplification agenda comes in and addressing excessive bureaucracy. There are also horizontal enabling factors like access to funding for European companies, where our savings and investments union comes in, and removing the barriers to a single market. So we have identified what needs to be done across different areas, and we are now implementing this competitiveness compass across all those different areas. As you see, there is no one silver bullet. We cannot say, okay, that's what we need to do, and then our competitiveness issues are solved. No, unfortunately, it's a complex task. It requires actions in many different directions, and this is what we are undertaking right now. And indeed, as part of this competitiveness discussion, also geopolitical discussion, we see also in Europe there is certain tendency towards protectionism. You know, if there is like buy Americans, and some are saying, why don't we? Let's buy European, and so on. But for European Union as a large and export-oriented economy, in a sense, if we follow this approach and close down, and with this also facilitate other economies closing down, we can only lose at the end of the day. So therefore, yes, we need to protect ourselves against unfair competition, and we have our trade defense toolbox to do so if it is necessary. We need to be mindful of our economic security, and there I like this, you know, American saying of small yard and high fence. Problem, unfortunately, this yard tends to become large quite quickly. So.
Because everyone loves the fence for different reasons, for the wrong reasons very often, yeah.
But, okay, this is indeed a debate which is ongoing, and where we'll have to find this balance right. But what is encouraging is that in the last year or so, we had also managed to advance quite a bit our trade agenda, with international trade environment being more complicated, with trade barriers proliferating. We had been advancing with a number of new trade agreements with Mercosur, with India, with Indonesia, with Australia, continuing to negotiate others, so which allows us to diversify our trade relationships and put those trade relationships on more reliable footing, which is also important in a situation where we see more challenges in trade and economic relations with our two largest trading partners, which are United States and China.
And what is your assessment right now of the transatlantic relationship? It swung back and forth during your three terms in the Commission.
What we are emphasizing is that transatlantic relationship remains important for us, both economically and geopolitically. With the United States, we are each other's largest trading partner and largest investment partner. EU-US trade and investment relationships are largest in the world. So there is lots of at stake economically and also geopolitically in a situation where authoritarian regimes are stretching the muscles and trying to dictate their rules. It is important that democratic countries work together. So that is our approach and engagement how we are pursuing from our side.
Thank you. We're about at the end of our time. Is there anything that you wish I'd asked you or anything you'd like to share with our listeners before we go?
No, I think we covered quite a bit of ground.
Fantastic. We really appreciate you coming on. You've been listening to The Sound of Economics. We've had Bruegel's Anne Boucher, Bruegel Director Jeremy Zettelmeyer, and European Commissioner Valdis Dombrovskis. Thank you for listening. All of our reports and things, you can find them on our website, bruegel.org. We'll have Anne's report in the show notes. Thanks. We'll see you next time.